Today I'm on location in Dallas, Texas. Very beautiful day here in the great state of Texas. My guest is, and you're going to be really impressed with this guest, I believe, Anthony Mark Hankins, fashion designer. He attended Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York, studied in Paris. At age 26, Anthony has his own clothing line. He grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey, profiled on the Today Show. Anthony Mark Hankins' designs are in over 324 JCPenney stores nationwide. Thanks for joining me today, Anthony. Tell us about yourself. I've given the audience just a brief overview, but tell us a little bit more about what makes Anthony tick.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to be a designer ever since I was a kid, and I've always, like, strived to make it. And I think my parents were such good role models. I remember as a kid having Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis records in my house, reciting Langston Hughes poetry. And I think that was just a good self-esteem as far as energy for me, as far as knowing what I want to do in life. And I've always believed that I wasn't going to take no for an answer in any field that I chose to do. And I chose fashion because of Willie Smith. When I was a kid, he was doing a lot of things with fashion and the colors and his just eye for detail. And I thought, you know, he reached the mass in such a big way that I want to reach the mass in a big way. So when I got the opportunity to go to Pratt and study, I focused in on ready-to-wear and did a little bit of work in couture. And by meeting some very, you know, popular women in New York, I was able to get a ticket to Paris and study at the Chambre Syndicale. But I've always been focused in on color and cut and clothing for African-American women so that they would feel comfortable in it. Because a lot of times I remember my mom being frustrated with not being able to find a hat or find a dress that really fit her needs. And even just being a missionary for her, it's hard for her to find Fifth Sunday dresses, white dresses that have a lot of detailing. So one of the things that we try to do in our line is each month have a white dress for missionaries. So it's been hard. It's not easy being a designer because most people think you just sit down and you sketch every day, and it's not like that at all.
Well, I want to take our audience back to your age 7. You mm-hmm. spoke of your mom. You did something pretty extraordinary by any standards for a 7-year-old. Tell our audience what you did for your mother.
Well, when I was 7, I designed a dress for her, and she wore it to this wedding. And my mother's the kind of mom that, if we were to draw on a piece of paper and it was just scribble, she would put it on the refrigerator. And she's very proud of all 7 of her kids. And I'm being a twin, I have a twin sister, she just really focused in on us at an early age and always pushed us to do things that were different. And every summer we'd go to Virginia and meet my grandmother on her ranch, and we would just learn like canning tomatoes and peaches and also how to quilt, make quilts. And at an early age, I was able to pick up some needling ideas as far as sewing. And one thing I wanted to do was make her a suit. Instead of her saying, no, I don't want you to do this, you know, this is not cool, she was like, no, I'm going to go buy you a sewing machine and buy you some fabric. She bought me a pattern. She showed me how to cut the pattern out. And we made this suit, and she wore it. And
how did the suit look? I mean, describe it for our audience.
It's like this buttercream suit. We have it upstairs. It's very crooked. The seams are very crooked. And it had lace on the collar, and it was just like a two-piece set. And the skirt had a zipper in the back. She told me to put a zipper in. And, like, it's so bad. But she wore it, and she's proud of that suit. We have it on loan here because we did some things with it in the community. But my mom is just a great lady. I mean, she has a soup kitchen on a weekend. She's a missionary, and she's very active in the community as far as the church. And she cares about people. And I think in order to be successful in anything you do, you have to be a caring person. And she instilled that in us at an early age. And now, you know, in everything we do, we try to interact young people in what we do.
Let's talk about your design. What makes Anthony Mark Hankins' line unique? What's unique about your clothing line?
Well, we don't do just little prints. We do very exciting prints. We do a lot of color. We try to take things from Africa, things that are from maybe even from Portugal, things from all over the world that kind of like have a unique flair to them. We pay attention to a lot of detailing. We do unique buttons. And then it has just that very like spiritedness to it. I think it's because everyone that works on a product is very connected to one another and we care about each other. So we're all trying to do the best job we can for our customer. And most designers are very expensive. Like they'll do a $500 suit, whereas we do things that are like $89, less than $100, and they're very well made, and they're a labor of love. And we're not in it because, oh, we want a big fat paycheck. We do it because we want to make sure that women of color and women of America who want a good value can find it and not have to look at markdown racks. They can buy it at original price, fits right, the quality's there, and the fabrics are the latest as far as trends. And we just really work hard to make sure that our customer is satisfied, and that's our focus. I mean, it's more of like we give her the indulgence, and our glory is having a customer say, wow, you know, Anthony, I love this. I love it. It's so different. And I can't believe I only paid $40 for this, you know?
So you take price into consideration as you design it, and why is that?
Well, because, you know, my mother raised 7 kids. I mean, on her paycheck, I mean, her salary. My mother worked in Dunkin' Donuts for many years as a manager, and she didn't make that much money. And she had to take, like, I mean, next to pennies and stretch it and get a wardrobe for herself and also a wardrobe for kids. And I just remember her being very, you know, saddened by a lot of the higher price lines that she couldn't afford for herself. And I just made up my mind a long time ago that if I ever did do a line, that it would be very affordable, that women wouldn't sit back and not enjoy it. And I think people should be able to afford fashion no matter what it is. I mean, some designers, they try to keep their styles to themselves and to a limited amount of people, like maybe 2% of the population. And my focus is that the whole world could buy something of Anthony, no matter if it's a lady who lives in an inner city complex and she's bringing in maybe $200 a week, she can be able to afford an Anthony Mark Hankins outfit and feel good about herself, because it's all about self-esteem, too.
Now, let's build upon self-esteem. You traveled to Paris and you studied at a very prestigious school there in Paris. You studied under Yves Saint Laurent and some other noted fashion designers. What was significant about your travel to Paris, and what did you learn from working on the Yves Saint Laurent?
Man, you know, Yves Saint Laurent is like one of the greatest designers, and I have nothing but just accolades for him and his staff and how they treated me and just the experience I had learning cut. I mean, it's so important to know how to cut a garment, let alone be able to style it, but to be able to master a cut and be able to create something that's totally unique in proportion and color. I mean, everyone talks about Walt Disney and cartoons, but I mean, Yves Saint Laurent is like one of the best colorists we have as designers. He's so creative in his shades and his dimension. And a lot of people don't realize, but Yves Saint Laurent was one of the first designers to use African-American models on the runways. He brought a lot of young ladies from Harlem and put them on the runway, and they were able to make a salary. So when I had the opportunity to go to Paris, he paid for all my schooling, and I had a chance to work within his studio, and I learned how to organize a design room. You know, how that, you know, accessory designers and clothing designers go hand in hand, and how to put together a fashion show and put it together properly, and also how to run a business and be able to make money out of what you design. And just being in the atelier of Saint Laurent and being around him and picking up a lot of pointers, I mean, it was so important to my career right now. And his level is so much more expensive than mine, and most people say, well, how could you relate that to what you do now? I mean, business ethics or customer service is the same no matter what level you're at. And you need to treat your customers nicely and be able to pay attention to them. And he's just one of the masters at taking a concept and distributing across the world and selling it to all races.
We're going to talk about the youth a little later, and I know you have a strong belief that there is a future out there for the youth, and they have to go out and capture it themselves. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about your how do you creatively go about designing a line of clothing? And do you just basically get this premonition at night and say, I'm going to design it this way? Or describe to our audience, if you can, mm-hmm. the process that you go through in terms of designing your line of clothing.
Well, you know, like for instance, if we're going into like December, we're working at December, we're working on next fall. So we work almost a year in advance on our lines. And when I first started, I used to do everything. I used to make the design direction boards, which would have illustrations and fabrics and trim, and it would even have a storyline to it, like a competitive market approach, because I believe that you need examples for some people, and it's better to have examples for buyers and senior merchandisers and even vice presidents of companies so they can see a direction format for a label. And I used to just like think of first a concept, and I always name a group. Like sometimes we'll name a group, for example, Senegal. And Senegal would, like you say, would evoke feelings of Senegal in Africa, the kind of colors, the kind of embroideries, the kind of fabrications you would find there. And I always like to do role play. I always like to have a theme, and themes work because they kind of get everyone in a feeling. And then we have like, you know, 5 to 6 people here who are very creative, and they will come up with a theme, and I tell them to go with that theme and develop silhouettes, develop fabrications. And one thing that we love to do is people watch. We'll go to the movie theaters, we'll go roller skating, we'll go to bowling alleys, and we'll watch our customer in action. We'll watch to see what she's wearing. We'll even go to churches and see what women are wearing to church, so we can get a feeling as to what kind of lengths. We don't like dictate she's gonna wear this length. We kind of like look at what she's wearing and what she likes and the kind of fabric she likes, because that's very important that we keep in time with our customer. Then from there, we'll develop a color palette, and we'll say for Senegal, we want banana, black, terracotta, cognac, we maybe want a little cream, and then we'll develop all these color formulas that we want. And then we'll call in a print designer that we work with, and she or he will come up with some kind of patterns that we like. We'll say, oh, we love the way this feels. And then we'll take those fabrics, whether they're solid or print, and we'll start working with silhouettes. And the silhouettes are really much created by us. We kind of like sketch out different bodies and different kind of rolling type of cuffs and collars, and then we'll coordinate it with our jewelry. So the jewelry sometimes substitute itself as actual jewelry or actual trim on a garment, like a button or some type of fastening trick on a garment. And then from there, we put together the whole collection, and we kind of weed out what we like and what we didn't like. And that's the fun part, because you can stand back and say, oh my God, I can't believe I designed this. And this is just totally doesn't fit our mood. And we design dresses, and that's a separate category. Then we'll do sportswear collections, which will be like tops, bottoms, jackets, vests, novelty items like a scarf, like a belt. And then you'll have another edition, which are key item focus. And key items are things that will keep you employed. Things that will be like runners, like a rug jacket, for example. Like we do these wonderful fringy jackets that we can sell any time of the year, and they always sell for us. And we try to invent a new silhouette. And this fall, we're planning on doing something like a quilted vest with a lot of detailing. And then our last category will be hats and accessories. And we'll design a hat line, and they'll coordinate with the line, and we'll have accessories. And then from there, they're talking about doing shoes, but we haven't hit the shoes part yet. But that's a little bit more difficult.
Quite all right. The program you're listening to is Like It Is. I'm Bob Franklin, on location today in Dallas, Texas. My guest is Anthony Mark Hankins, a fashion designer. Mr. Hankins attended Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York. He studied in Paris. At age 26, get it now, 26, he has his own clothing line. So if that doesn't challenge the young folk as well as some of these old folk in terms of getting up and getting on the good foot, nothing ever will. Anthony has been talking about his life and some of the things that he's doing to make a difference in the lives of many others. Anthony, you said of your sister, you said she was a tomboy who loved to climb trees and play baseball. You made dresses for your mom. Nothing wrong with that picture, right? Did kids ever tease you about your talent? And if so, how did you overcome it?
Well, you know what? Like, the one thing that I always did with my talent was I always shared. And even in elementary school, I used to always make things. I used to make camp shirts. That was my fun thing to make. I used to love to make camp shirts, and I used to make headbands because that was the style back then. And like most people think, well, you must have been teased about it. And I really wasn't, because a lot of the guys who were on the football team and on the track team, they used to come to me, Anthony, could you fix my shorts? Anthony, could you fix my pants? And they thought it was cool that they can get some free clothing done. And the kind of community I come from, everybody like really supports one another. Like, we had some guys who were into performing arts and dancing and stuff like that. And just everybody was just very, very interested in each other's, you know, contributions. And I used to fix football uniforms. These guys used to come to me and say, oh, my shoulder blade thing came out of my thing. Could you sew this up? And I mean, it was kind of like a very open-minded school. Whereas I think today, there probably is more challenges for young men if they want to go into design, because they probably think, oh, you know, look at that guy. He's a punk. He wants to do that. And I think, you know, the one thing we need to do is we need to be encouraging to our young people. And we need to say that, look, you can do this. And it's not anything wrong with a designer wanting to, a young guy wanting to be a designer or a tailor. I mean, most tailors are men, and they're very good at that. But most of my friends, they thought about all the freebies they could get out of it. I mean, I have some friends now. We're having a class reunion, a 10-year class reunion next year, and I got some phone calls from some of the guys. I still got my shirt you made, man. Is it worth any money? Could you sign it? So, I mean, like, they're really cool. And my brother played football. I had a brother 2 years older than me, so if they messed with me, my brother was going to get them, you know.
Big brother take care of them.
Yeah.
Anthony, at age 26, there are some challenges out there. And positive as well as, I think, negative. Mm-hmm. Your older colleagues, you mentioned that sometimes they can be territorial and potentially stand in your way. How did you get around them and the obstacles that they placed in your path?
Well, I think it's really intimidating for anyone to deal with someone who's young, who's like 25. If you've been in a corporate environment and you've been there for like 45, you're 45 or you're 50, you've been there for 25 to 38 years, it's very intimidating for you to have someone young come in and say, look, I want to do this, I want to do this, and I want to do that, because it kind of puts them on the path like, hey, this guy could be taking my place. And people get very territorial with their positions. And when I first started to design the line at Penny's, there were a lot of people who were had wonderful opportunities of helping me that were kind of like upset that I was there and I had decided to do this, whereas the CEO of the company of JCPenney, Mr. Howell, said, look, this is something we're going to do because this is the right thing to do. And Mr. Howell and his staff and some of the other people were very supportive, and they said, look, we need to help Anthony, support him so that, you know, so just in case we get some of our seniority people or people who are in vice president positions who are jealous or who do not care about what he's trying to do, so they won't stand in my way. But it, you know, I think they try, but there still are people who are just like, you know, you can't do this, you won't do this, and I'm gonna do whatever I can to stop you. And what I did to get around that was, if someone would tell me no, I would go to someone else. And I know that's not the right thing to do in corporate America, but if you're a talented person and you have the talent and you command things to happen and your name is on something and you're responsible for whether or not it sells or whether or not the quality is good, you're going to do whatever you can to save that project. And it was like my baby, and it still is my baby. So whenever someone would tell me, like I had the supervisor who would tell me, no, 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 I would go to the president of the division and say, look, you know, I'm really trying to do this. And it was very difficult, and I think it takes someone who's very, very focused to keep on doing that for a long time. Whereas I said, I'm going to do this for 2 years. I got my 5-year plan, and after 2 years, I'm going to leave and do my own thing on my own, because there's only so much time you could spend on office politics and not spend on your career pathing. But I was able to get some mentors who were very supportive. So when this one person who was just very, you know, just evil and just, I mean, you would not believe the things that he would try to do. I mean, he just tried to. He was one of the people that told me I couldn't do this with Penny's. I mean, I'm sure he's sitting back now eating his crow. But he says, oh, you'll never make it with JCPenney. You would never do this. And, you know, if it wasn't for, like, the CEO and his support staff saying, look, this is something we need to do, and I don't care about this one man who needs to go through some type of diversity training, his mind needs to be refocused. We have to look at the overall picture of what JCPenney represents. So, you know, I'm very, very happy that Mr. Howell was able to, you know, open up doors for me and get me in the right areas. And now we have a new CEO, Mr. Ostreicher, and Mr. Ostreicher, I know, is already trying to implement programs so that this one person still doesn't try to knock off our program. But what has been great about coming across brick walls is now that they're my customer and I'm selling directly to them, and I'm not working for them, I've been able to develop some good business skills and some great people orientation skills as far as like customer and relations. And you need that in order to deal with people, because there are some people they will just hem and haw with you, and they'll say, look, we're going to do this, and they don't even come through with it. And you have to be prepared for the no's. And but I pride myself in the fact that I only take on jobs that I can handle and only things that I feel right. And that comes with being spiritually aware of yourself and being very focused in your inner thought and listening and having a good ear.
Let's talk about challenging the moment. I think you've already started on a portion of this question, but I'd like maybe to have you elaborate a bit more. Most people stand on the sidelines, as you were mentioning a few seconds ago, and often miss their moment in the sun or hesitate due to lack of self-assuredness. What's your advice to that individual or individuals listening to this program? What advice would you give them?
You know, I tell people all the time, get off of your assets. You know, get off of your assets. Get up and make things happen and act up, but in a positive way. I tell people all the time, you gotta get up and be empowered and march and walk and be dedicated. If you want to be the world's best florist, over-exaggerate what you do. Go in there and make it happen. Whether you send flowers to someone famous or whether you send a letter, I believe in thank you notes. I think thank you notes are very important. I'm a really good friend with Terry, and Terry will tell you, you know, you have to send thank you notes. You have to send thank you notes. And Susan Taylor talks about in the spirit, you have to be in contact with your community, because it's going to be your community that's going to support you. And, you know, like, whereas my grandmother started in the community making hats and designing and doing things, and I started doing it on my own and started selling things to the missionary ladies in my own community. Now, if I go back to Elizabeth, New Jersey, I'm always invited to someone's house. And that's more encouragement. So that gives you the energy to go to the next level. So it's important that you develop those community ties, that you become active, whether it's in your church or you're active in Easter Seals or United Way, that people know that you're not just about making money, you're not just about your business. But there's so many people who just sit on the sideline and they just say, why me, and it's a pity party. But you know what? Things can be a lot worse. So if you think about what could be worse than what I am right now, that'll give you a lot more energy to go to the next level. And you need to corner what you do and love what you do. I mean, there's some people who've made a living off of just loving bath products. Look at Bath & Beyond. Look at Crate & Barrel. Look at Pier 1. I mean, some man probably said, look, I love going to all these different ports, and I pulled all together all these concepts and developed a whole company around it. So people really need to be acknowledge what they do. I know there's another Sara Lee out there just waiting for her ingredients to be eaten by some people like myself. So, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities, and people just really need to listen to self-motivational tapes. I mean, Les Brown has some great tapes. I love Les's work, and I've listened to a lot of Les's work, and it gives me a lot of energy to go to the next level, and even Montel Williams has some great motivational tapes. So I really believe in motivational tapes, whether you listen to them in your car, they're really helpful, because I'm in my car, and I remember about 8 years ago, I used to have my Honda Civic, a 1986 model, and I'd be driving in my Honda Civic, and I used to listen to my motivational tape, I'm going to see myself behind a Mercedes someday. And I kept on saying it to myself and listening to the last say, you're going to do that, you're going to do that, you just got to believe it. And now I'm driving behind a Mercedes. So you just got to see yourself in your dream profession, in your dream home, and in your dream lifestyle. And that happens. And if you ask anyone who's successful, I mean, whether it's Donald Trump or Diane Carroll or any famous person, Whitney Houston, they always envision themselves in their dream world. And you got to make it happen. I believe that you can command whatever you want, but you have to be directed, you got to be motivated, you got to be focused, and you got to write affirmations. And Spike Lee will tell you, before he got his first movie, he used to write affirmations all around his house. Everywhere you went, there was an affirmation. I'm going to be a movie director. I'm going to produce movies. I'm going to make it. I'm going to be this. I'm going to do that. And look at Spike now. And people wonder, how did Spike do it? Affirmations. How does Russell Simmons do it? Affirmations. Believing in yourself.
You have stated that you want to give back to the African-American community. How are you going about doing that?
Well, one of the ways I'm doing it is we work with the United Negro College Fund. We do a lot with UNCF, and it's very, very successful. UNCF is just great because everyone who's participated in has been through UNCF school. They're just so aware of our brothers and sisters, and they really want to propel them to the next level. And there's so many great colleges out there that are just looking for vast opportunities to promote ethnicity and promote our brothers on a higher pedestal. And I just believe in supporting the schools. We need to get them some art programs going in there, because it's not just about academia, it's also about arts and getting them empowered in being our architects or being designers of graphics for movies, for plays. I mean, there's a lot of business out there that we tend to just not even see because we're so occupied with the movies or we're so occupied with sports that we don't realize that, you know, if we have brothers and sisters out there designing cars and designing vases and designing plates, I mean Limoges plates, I mean, there's so much out there for us to do as far as graphically and illustrations and stuff like that. So that's one of my formats. And whenever I go to a UNCF campaign, I always say, gotta do this. Come on, Marietta Collins, we need to do this. We need to, you know, start devoting monies towards the arts. Because when I wanted to go into fashion design, there was really no type of program at UNCF. And right now, they have programs, which is great. I mean, 10 years later, who would think that they would have something that's dedicated just to designers? Another thing that we do is we go to all the inner city schools across the country. Whenever I do a fashion show, I make sure that if I'm going to Los Angeles, I can stop at like Culver City High School or Crenshaw and just talk to the students and get them to be motivated about fashion. And we do what we call the Fabric of Dreams program. And, you know, we've gotten so much attention from Mary Wright Edelman. She's like very involved with it, and because I was a product of Head Start, and she's just, you know, endorsed our program. And also our previous governor really believes in our program. And it's just great that we have a lot of people who have come together and realized that the arts is becoming a lost art. I hate to be redundant, but it's true, and that we need to put money into the inner city schools for great art supplies and getting some programs implemented that will direct these kids into programs that will give them talent so they can go out there and command any salary. And that's what we need to do. We need to be focused in on, if our kid likes to draw and color, give him a coloring book and give him some more things to challenge him. Give him maybe some white paper with no lines to color in and say, look, you be empowered and draw what you want to draw. And don't say, oh, that's never going to amount to anything, because you never know. That could be another Picasso sitting at your desk. And my nephew, who, I mean, he's a phenomenal drawer. He's only 5, and he draws better than Picasso. So, you know, we're going to keep him motivated, because you never know. He could be the next Jacob Lawrence.
Well, I want to, as we run toward the end of this program, I would like to invite you to Maryland's Eastern Shore, to the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. We have a lot of talented people at that institution who would be more than happy to work with you in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
I would love to come. They just can call.
Okay, I will certainly. I want to get your opinion on this next question. What solace, if any, can an aspiring overweight young man or woman have in becoming a model when so oft times the models we see are slim and not overweight?
You know, that's, you know, it's so true. And I think a lot of things are changing right now in the world. People want to see themselves. Americans want to see real people. And one thing we do in our fashion shows, we show true to life models all the way up to size 26W. And I think a lot of times it's not that you need to lose weight, it's just you need to get out there and be in fashion shows. And we need to demand to see more people like ourselves in print and television. And, you know, I think, first of all, there are agencies out there that are for people who are voluptuous or beautiful, that they can get started. We have one model, her name is Carolyn, and she works through a special agency, and we use her all the time for print, and people love that. They want to see, I have so many full-size women out there that want to see themselves. They don't want to see a size 6 model. And it's very rarely we do shoot a size 6 model. We shoot usually a 10 to a 18W, and then sometimes we have like a 24W. But I think the one thing you need to do is know that, you know, my opportunity is going to come, and I'm not going to change myself because this is what society wants, and I'm going to find a niche for myself because I believe there's a niche for everyone.
My guest today has been Anthony Mark Hankins, a fashion designer. He attended Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York, studied in Paris, and at 26, age 26, Anthony has his own clothing line, Anthony Mark Hankins. He grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey. He has been profiled on today on the Today Show. And Anthony Mark Hankins designs are in over 324 JCPenney stores nationwide. Anthony, it's been my privilege, and thank you for being a guest today on Like It Is.
Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.